Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
The White House announced today that President Trump would donate his first quarter salary to the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's just a little less money than he's given to veterans of his affairs.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, Seth chats with actor Zach Woods, one of the stars of HBO's Silicon Valley. Then, just for this podcast, Zach sticks around backstage at Studio AG to answer a few more questions. But first, a closer look.
For President Trump and his inner circle, the past 48 hours have brought one damning bombshell after another. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Since Donald Trump was elected, the news has been coming at us fast, but the last 48 hours have felt like standing in front of one of those tennis ball machines without a racket. Ow! China! Ow! North Korea! Michael Cohen! Don Jr.! Porn stars! Collusion! Ow! Ow! Obstruction! Oh! Royal wedding! Ow! Giuliani! It's been a truly head-spinning 48 hours of news. In fact, things are so crazy that I'm just gonna sit here with my mouth open so that they can digitally add in all the breaking news that will happen after we tape this show tonight, but before it airs. Here we go.
President Trump filed a new financial disclosure form admitting he lied about repaying his lawyer for a hush payment to Stormy Daniels, while the Senate Judiciary Committee released new evidence about Don Jr.'s meeting with the Russians at Trump Tower suggesting an attempted cover-up. And also, a Qatari businessman says Cohen asked him for $1 million. And also, Cohen was working on a deal to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. And also, Donald Trump is currently leading the police on a high-speed chase on the Los Angeles freeway in a white Ford Bronco.
Who knows? We had to make some educated guesses. I hope all that information was correct. Now, as we learned last week, Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, had a secret shell company set up not only to pay off Stormy Daniels, but to collect millions of dollars in secret payments from companies and a firm link to a Russian oligarch. We know about these secret payments because Cohen's bank records were leaked, but last night we got a truly crazy story about why the person who leaked those bank records decided to do it.
The New Yorker, speaking to a law enforcement official who claims to be the individual who leaked Michael Cohen's bank records, a whistleblower. Quote, the official had grown alarmed after being unable to find two important reports on Cohen's financial activity in a government database. The official, worried that that information was being withheld from law enforcement, released the remaining documents. The two missing reports reportedly involved more than $3 million in additional transactions, which we have not seen, triple the amount in the report that was released last week.
Wow, so an anonymous law enforcement official discovered that some of Cohen's bank records detailing more than $3 million in secret payments were missing and decided to leak the rest of them. Man, you know a story is crazy when it involves a deep throat and an actual porn star. Also, can I just say that whenever they eventually make a movie about all this, it is gonna suck because it will never be as crazy as the real thing. Plus, it's hard to follow all this in real time. Imagine if you compressed it into 2 hours. You'd have to cut the screen into 9 blocks. Of course, the Cohen news also coincides with huge new developments in the Russia investigation. Now, one of the big questions in that investigation has been whether special counsel Robert Mueller can indict the president. Basically, there's a debate about it. Justice Department guidelines say no, but others say he could. Yesterday, however, Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani said out of nowhere that he had been assured that Mueller would not try to indict Trump.
Giuliani is telling CNN tonight that he has been told by the special counsel, by Bob Mueller's team, that they cannot indict a sitting president.
I asked him specifically if they realized or acknowledged they didn't have the power to indict. And then the next day or the day after, they clarified it for Jay Sekulow, who was with me at the meeting, that they didn't have the power to indict.
Just think about how dumb this is. He's not saying the president's innocent. He's saying you can't indict him. It's like if your wife asked you where you've been all night and you said, cheating isn't grounds for divorce. In fact, not only is Rudy not going on TV and proclaiming Trump's innocence, he's going on TV and, as usual, making him sound incredibly guilty. Last night, for example, he went on Fox News again, where he was asked about the allegations of Russian collusion against the Trump campaign, and Rudy tried to claim there was nothing wrong with getting dirt on your opponent from a foreign adversary.
When I ran against them, they were looking for dirt on me every day. I mean, that's what you do. Maybe you shouldn't, but you do it. Nothing illegal about that. And even if it comes from a Russian or a German or an American, it doesn't matter. And they never used it, is the main thing. They never used it. They rejected it.
Rejected it? Rejected what? Did Rudy Giuliani just go on TV and reveal that they did get dirt from the Russians and just didn't use it? Man, for a guy who looks like he eats brains, he sure doesn't have any. Also, does anybody believe that Trump would get dirt on Hillary and decide not to use it? No, I want to win fair and square. Put this dirt in my safe next to Obama's Kenyan birth certificate. In fact, Rudy isn't the only Trump lawyer who's been on TV confessing the stuff. Trump's former divorce lawyer, Jay Goldberg, went on MSNBC this week, where he was asked about Michael Cohen's alleged mob ties, and out of nowhere, he basically seemed to confess that Cohen, Trump's fixer, paid off the mom on Trump's behalf when Trump was a real estate developer.
We hear a lot now about potential money laundering and the mafia. Why do you think that comes up with Michael Cohen?
Well, people involved in the building trades are at the mercy of the mob.
Do you think Michael Cohen's job at times was to keep the mob away from Donald Trump?
Well, if he says he was a fixer, then the question is, what did he fix and what needed fixing? What needed fixing was relations with the mob.
I'm sorry, who is that guy looking at? Is there a ghost on set? Does he see a mobster with wings? Is it the devil saying, soon your soul will be mine? Of course, all of this infuriates Trump, who cannot stop lashing out on Twitter and in private about the investigation. The Washington Post reported this week that the president vents to associates about the FBI raids on his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, as often as 20 times a day. Trump gripes that he needs better TV lawyers to defend him on cable news. You mean somebody better than Atticus Grinch over here? That's right, Trump wants TV lawyers. I can't wait for his trial. Your Honor, I'd like you to introduce my legal team, Perry Mason, Ally McBeal, Boston Legal, Jag, Matlock, Celino Barnes-Suits, and John Travolta for the Beaver Lizard O.J. Simpson. As a reminder, that Trump sees the entire world through TV. When it comes time to go before a judge, he's going to be shocked. Mr. Trump, how do you plead? Who are you? I thought I was getting hot bench. It's a real show. Of course, right now, Trump's main TV lawyer is Giuliani, who has repeatedly gone on TV to contradict Trump and confess things that Trump has previously denied. Now, apparently, Trump and Rudy do meet to discuss strategy, although it doesn't sound like they get into the legal nitty-gritty. Giuliani told the Post that the two men huddled for 5 hours May 6 at Trump National Golf Club in Virginia, eating a Cobb salad, Giuliani, and a well-done burger, Trump, with half a bun in service to his health. I do that too sometimes, Giuliani said about the half bun. It's a good way to do it. Well, it must be because you both look great. Goodbye, other bun. What do you do for exercise? I like to jog up the first couple steps on the escalator before I settle into my lean. If you think Rudy's incompetent when it comes to the law, apparently he's also bad at getting out of cars. According to the Daily News, Giuliani and his staff doored a pedicab driver in Midtown Thursday. People think he's going to see Mueller coming. He didn't even check both ways for a pedicab. Now, Trump and Giuliani keep calling Mueller's probe a witch hunt, but in reality, it seems like almost everyone who is interviewed by Mueller's team comes out scared about how much he knows. Just take former Trump aide Michael Caputo, who said Mueller was still very interested in allegations of collusion.
These guys have got every single email, anything that's ever gone down, and they're clearly focused on trying to identify some Russian collusion.
You do not believe that they have ruled out the idea of that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia?
No, I don't think so at all. I think they're still focused on it. They know exactly what they're looking for, and they have emails backing it up. And I don't think that they ask any questions they don't already know the answer to. Thank goodness I watch a lot of cop TV.
Oh, you watch a lot of cop TV? Well, then let me ask you this question. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Let's be honest, cops is going to be great preparation because it's only a matter of time before we see on CNN a shaky footage of a naked, blurry Trump being chased down the street.
There was no collusion. You colluded. I didn't collude.
This has been a closer look. Our guest is a very funny actor and comedian who stars in HBO's critically acclaimed series Silicon Valley. The season 5 finale airs Sunday night on HBO. Please welcome back to the show our friend Zach Woods, everybody.
Thanks, Seth.
Congratulations on season 5. The finale airs Sunday. Yeah. What was it like? What's it, shooting a finale? Was it sad is when a season ends that you're not going to see each other for a while?
Yeah, I always feel sad. I love shooting the show so much. This season, everyone was kind of fatigued by the end because it had been a long shoot. And the last day of shooting, we were shooting a scene that took place on a campsite, and they hired a bunch of background actors to be in the campsite. And we kept seeing this guy who was a Jack Nicholson lookalike, like, but not like looked vaguely like Jack Nicholson, like a professional Jack Nicholson lookalike, had somehow like wormed his way into the background. And I think just because it was the end of the shoot, everyone was so exhausted that no one was like, can we get Jack Nicholson out of the shot? So when you watch the end of Silicon Valley, like, if you look, there will be, like, a Jack Nicholson in the background.
Like an unaddressed Jack Nicholson.
Totally unaddressed. It? And he was weirdly holding an umbrella, even though it wasn't, like, a little, like, a parasol. It felt like a bizarre, like, hallucination. Like, I was like, did I have carbon monoxide poisoning?
Obviously, this show is about the tech world, Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
You, yourself, not good at tech.
No, not good at all. I never, even just, like, very basic things. Like, I shared an email address with my father until I was in college. Or, like, I never knew how to do clear history,
uh-huh.
Which is a real liability when you're a teenage boy.
Yeah.
And, like, this is a very embarrassing story, but my freshman year of college, my computer wasn't working, and I'd had an experience the night before. So I used my roommate's computer to look up, can you get pregnant from dry humping? And I didn't know how to clear history. So then he came home and then he was like, hey, man, do you think you could get pregnant from dry humping? You're 19 years old. What are you talking about? Turns out you can't.
Okay. That's good because I do feel like there were probably a couple of kids at home right now who haven't figured that out.
Yeah.
And now you saved them having to Google it.
Well, I should qualify it. If there's kids watching, I mean, maybe you can if you're incredibly fertile. But that roommate was like, he was actually the perfect person to have that experience with because he was a really weird guy. Like the first time
this
I
met him. This is a freshman roommate in college?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
First time I met him, he said to me, one of the first things he said to me was, hey, man. You ever dream of being locked up in a Swedish women's prison? And I was like, no, I haven't. And then he was, no joke, he said, you ever dream that you can kill people with just your eyes? And I was like, no, and now I'm gonna sleep with a small baseball bat by my bed. But he turned out to be a really nice guy. He just spectacularly bad at icebreakers.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
You have an incredibly close-knit cast, and obviously you guys have worked together for a long time. Middleditch was here recently, and he was talking about how he did Taekwondo when he was young. You did karate.
I did, yes.
How were you at karate?
Exceptionally mediocre. I took karate classes at the Jewish Community Center, where all great martial artists are birthed. Yeah. I assume Bruce Lee started at a JCC in Hackensack or something. But I was not good. I had this sensei who was this wonderful woman. She's this sort of kindly lesbian sensei. I guess it's not important that she's lesbian, but just now you know. Yeah. She was this very sweet woman. And I remember early on in a class, I asked to go to the bathroom. I guess I probably had anxiety about doing karate. And she was like, okay, just a second. And then she forgot that I needed to go to the bathroom. And I peed in my gi, which is an entirely white outfit. And so I couldn't even defend myself against humiliation, let alone an assailant.
It seems like as a sensei, it seems like you have at that point self-selected out as a karate master. Yeah. She probably took a look at you and said, no matter what, this probably isn't going to happen for Zach. What other things were you into as a kid?
What was I into? I was into all sorts of weird stuff. I was kind of an obnoxious little kid in that I was like, I dressed like a liberal arts professor when I was little. Like when I was 8, I would wear these like tweed jackets. Like I basically dressed like Diane Keaton from Annie Hall. And, I would wear a fedora, which is unacceptable. And I was walking down the street in New York one time, and a guy pulled up in a car at an intersection, leaned over, rolled down his window, and just went, "Lose the hat," and then drove away.
That's an incredible public service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy is basically my guardian angel.
Yeah. For someone in New York to say that without any curse words is a true act of kindness.
No, there was no malice in it. It was just like, I have information that you need.
It's always so great to see you, Zach. Congrats on another season of the show. Such
a
pleasure. Okay. Zach Woods, everybody. Season finale of Silicon Valley. Sunday night on HBO.
Hey, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Zach Woods, Silicon Valley. You met Seth at UCB in New York. What originally attracted you to improv as a young kid or teenager, however old you were when you started?
When I was little, I wanted to be a jazz musician. I played trumpet, and then I got braces, and I couldn't play anymore. And so I had all this free time when I used to be practicing my trumpet, and I wanted to do something else. And I think improv was attractive to me partly because I like comedy and partly because it sort of was weirdly analogous to jazz. It was improvised. It was in dark clubs. You didn't get paid anything for it. It was like, short of being an actual jazz musician, this was sort of as close as I could get.
Were you interested in acting as well, or was it just improv and comedy?
Not that much. I mean, I was like, a little bit maybe. I liked musicals when I was a kid. My favorite movie when I was a boy was Pirates of Penzance. So it was a miracle that I wasn't beaten to death before middle school. I don't know if I had like theatrical aspirations.
Did you tell people in junior high and middle school that you were a big fan of Pirates of Penzance, or was that
that was my pickup line? I'd be like, hey hon, you want to chat Gilbert and Sullivan over a couple chamomile teas?
But when you were in New York, you were also auditioning for a lot of things, and a lot of actors, you've had insane audition stories.
Yes.
Can you tell us about Starburst audition?
Yes, of course. The commercial auditions are generally sort of a gauntlet of humiliation, but even though a lot of the people in New York are quite nice, but just the content of the commercials can be quite degrading. And this one that I auditioned for was a Starburst commercial where I went in at like 10 in the morning into this fluorescent lit room, and they said, okay, we need you to take off your shirt and put on this Rastafarian wig. So I was standing there shirtless with a Rastafarian wig, and then they had women come into the room, and I would have to feed them Starbursts, and they were appropriately horrified. And also, I have an indentation in my chest, so basically, like, I have this weird slope in my chest, so the second I took my shirt off, the casting director became sort of like transfixed by my mutation, and she was like, I could tell I wasn't going to get the job, so I just had to stay because they didn't have enough guys. So it's just woman after woman coming in, seeing me dressed in a Rastafarian wig, which is a low-key nightmare, and then I'd feed them a Starburst, and they'd go on to their ruined day.
So you're on this big, successful HBO show now. Do you still audition often, and do you still...
Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
hate auditioning, or...
I hate it, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to find a way to not hate it. And it's not always terrible, but uh-huh. yeah, it's just a bizarre exchange. It's, I don't know. Yeah, but sometimes if there's something you're really excited about, then it can be fun because it's like you get to play that part for at least 5 minutes or right. something, whether or right. not you actually get it.
What was the audition like for Silicon Valley?
Well, initially, I auditioned to play Ehrlich, which was T.J. Miller's character. All of us did. We all read Ehrlich, because that was the sort of the part that was written in the most developed way initially. Mm-hmm. So those are the sides that everyone got. And then they called me back for Jared, which even like back then was kind of a different part. He was a little bit more of a backbiting kind of, or I don't know, backbiting, but sort of a Machiavellian character. Mm-hmm. And then once the actual show got picked up this series, he sort of transformed into his current
right.
thing.
What has it been like being on a show about Silicon Valley as Silicon Valley has changed so much? I mean, the view of Silicon Valley now, the place, is so much different than it was when this show started.
Right. I mean, we're like with the election and everything. Yeah, it's a crazy shift to witness. Even just going to Silicon Valley, uh-huh. you know, there's like, at least when the show started, there was a lot of sort of, you know, a lot of people there are really, really nice, but there's also a fair amount of self-congratulation,
which I
think has probably died down somewhat this year, I would think. But I don't know.
How often do you guys go there? Because I know you film in LA.
We typically go there once a year. This is, I actually think, the first year we haven't done a screening up there.
Yeah. Oh, you screen the show up there?
Yeah, we did screenings there.
How does that go versus other places?
It's interesting. It's like they're, I think, maybe a little bit more subdued, but maybe it's just because they're like tech nerds.
Sure. It could be anything you're screening.
Yeah, exactly. More subdued. Right. It's a... I'm so tech illiterate though, I wouldn't know. Like, I would meet people, like I met Elon Musk and I didn't know who he was. Like I met Craig's from Craigslist and like we had this weird conversation where it was like so loud. Like if you have a room full of socially inept like tech guys, you shouldn't like crank the music because it's hard enough. Like even right, in complete right. silence, it would be hard to have a conversation. And so it was like awkward actors and awkward tech guys trying to talk over this like gigantic subwoofer. And I just sort of like had probably a 10-minute conversation with Craig from Craigslist where I think I heard like a total of 15 words. Like I don't know what we talked about.
And you did not know who he was?
No. Until he told me I'm Craig from Craigslist eventually.
What's he like?
He was very nice. He seemed like a genial kind of weirdo. Yeah. He's a sweet guy.
I feel like that's one of the facts everyone knows, like where they were when they heard that. It's like, oh, there's actually an actual Craig from Craigslist.
Yeah.
Like, I remember hearing that when I was in college. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, it's like Tom from MySpace, right?
Yeah.
Is he real or is he just like a
drawing? He's not real.
He's not.
I'm very sorry if he is real and he's listening to this. He's a huge fan of the Late Night Podcast.
Sorry, Tom.
It's also must be a really cool show because the cast knew each other before. Mm. How does that change the job you guys do when you're on set? It must be so nice to work with friends.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. I think it's, I think there's just like a level of comfort, not just interpersonally, but like comedically, if you sort of,
yeah,
if
you can see it when you watch the show.
Yeah, and you know how to sort of set people up and
right.
and make room for people in the way that they want it. And it's really nice. It's not competitive at all, you know, like, like we'll nice. Pitch each other dumb jokes sometimes. We'll like, you know, I'll insecurely after a take go to Kumail and be like, was that all right? And then he'll be like, yeah, that was good. And then I'll go to Thomas so and I'll be like, was that all right? And he'll be like, I just heard you ask Kumail that. We're like, stop being so insecure.
Does your tech illiteracy does it cause problems or challenges for you sometimes when you're reading scripts? Like, do not understand.
They have tech consultants on the show, so I will make sure I know. I'll never say a line where I don't know what I'm saying.
Smart.
So I'll always ask the consultants. Thank God they're there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're just Silicon Valley people who just show up.
Yeah, like entrepreneurs who have like decided to give us some portion of their life to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've heard you all interviewed, and you all have amazing stories about like the crazy startups and tech ideas you've all heard in Silicon Valley. Like, you must just be around people who just have these crazy ideas for apps and types of things.
The first time we premiered the show, we were at South by Southwest in Austin, and there's a big tech component of that festival. And I was sitting in the restaurant in the hotel, and I heard a guy doing like a dry run practice pitch for his app, and he described it as the Mahatma Gandhi of apps.
What was the app?
I don't know. Am I allowed to?
You're fine.
Okay. I don't know. It's insane.
Insane.
Can you imagine saying that? What does that even mean?
It's so obnoxious.
It's so crazy.
The Mahatma Gandhi of apps.
Yeah. It's right. I have the Rosa Parks of podcasts. what are you talking about?
You're setting yourself up just to fail and be ridiculed.
Yes.
Deservedly so.
Of course.
Well, thank you for being on this podcast.
Oh,
I'm not going to compare it to any.
It is like before we started recording, you were like, "This is the Nelson Mandela of podcasts."
Okay, that was started recording. Okay?
I just want that to be on the record.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
okay, bye.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.